Hey there, Susan here, and I'm so excited that you've tuned into the show today. You know, this show is really and truly my life's work, and the vision is to empower and inspire a million entrepreneurs every single week to going for their dreams, taking action on their goals, and not playing small. And if you're listening to this right now, maybe you need to hear my words today. And you are playing small and you are sitting there going, I need to start a business. I'm thinking of starting the business. I know so many people like that. Then just get started. And starting doesn't necessarily mean that you're out there selling your product and service right away. It can mean doing the research, creating your plan of action, surrounding yourself with the right people, getting that foundation in place. And that's what we're going to talk about today. My amazing guest is a long, long time friend. And it was really what we spoke about in the show in terms of this getting ready to get ready versus doing your research and taking those necessary steps. In the show, we're also going to talk about how you can improve your pitch, whether you're pitching to investors, you're pitching to potential customers, whether you're pitching your idea in front of a small audience or a big one. That's what we're going to talk about and the 12 mistakes that people make. So my guest today is an amazing, amazing human being. And I'm going to read her bio. She is the principal and founder of Shodian Communications, which is a public speaking, sales, training, and consulting firm. For over 30 years, she has served as a speaker and consultant for Fortune 500 companies, industry associations, academic conferences, CEOs, and members of Congress. She was inducted into the National Speakers Association Council of Peers Award for Excellence, Speakers Hall of Fame, a lifetime award for speaking excellence and professionalism. She is a New York Times best-selling author and award-winning and highly paid speaker, a popular LinkedIn trainer, and a frequent guest on radio and television talk shows. She's appeared on the Today Show, Bloomberg, CNN, CNBC, and many industry podcasts. And we had the privilege to sit down in this episode and really do a deep dive into how we can all improve as entrepreneurs in terms of getting more sales, getting more investors, and just really putting ourselves out there and being presentation ready. So my guest today is the amazing, amazing Terry Shodian. And don't forget, at the end of the show, I am going to be doing this week's Startup Journal, and I have a lot of things to share. So stay tuned and let's get started with this episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. This is Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, the show that brings the no-nonsense truth of what is required to start, grow, and scale your business. I am your host, Susan Sly. Well, hey, what is up, Raw and Real Entrepreneurs, wherever you are in the world? I hope you are having an amazing day. And once again, when my friends are on the show, I'm like, stop, we have to stop talking because we like are having this great conversation. I'm like, but we need to share it with the world. And Terry and I were having an incredible dialogue around her work, what she's doing, the research, the, you know, what's happening with her in terms of LinkedIn learning. I'm like, girl, we have to stop because we need to be talking about this in the show. But before we jump into all of that, first and foremost, Terry, welcome to the show. It's so exciting to have you here and to share our dialogue with the world. We should be drinking wine though.
Yes. Thank you, Susan, for having me. It's an honor to be back with you. And I am just so incredibly impressed with what you've been manifesting and putting together. So, yay us.
Well, yay us. Yeah. It's like, it's reaching this age and stage in our lives. It's like, you know, Scarlett O'Hara, frankly, I just don't give a damn. And, like just going for it with a passion. And likewise, like when you wrote Scrappy, And I loved that because it was like, you know, it's really this, I felt it was almost like a manifesto. And for some people, you know, permission based to, hey, like, let's get scrappy. Let's get out there. Let's really go and take a stand and take action in terms of what it is we want. And here you are with your latest opus, which we'll talk about in a minute. And before we do, I want everyone to know. So Terry is, as I said in the intro, a very in-demand, highly paid keynote speaker. She is an incredible author. She is, you know, this person who is out there making change. And what a lot of people don't realize is to be a paid speaker and to be an author, you are a business owner as an entrepreneur. So Terry, I want to jump in right there. Like, what is it people don't know about the entrepreneurial side of the speaking business that, you know, you want to share? Take us in.
Oh my gosh. Well, so I've been a full-time professional speaker now for almost 30 years. And, you know, I'm a speech geek. I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but I competed in speech and debate in high school and in college. So there's a through line on the significance of public speaking and persuasive presentation skills in my life. But in 1990, I was promoting other speakers, legends, Brian Tracy, Barb Schwartz, and others. And I always knew, I would say to myself, gosh, someday I would love to be a speaker, but I think the best way to do that is to cut your teeth by promoting somebody else and really learning the business side. Everyone wants the gig. Nobody understands that there is a huge monster machine that goes behind that to get you those presentation opportunities, to get those platform opportunities, and what you have to do to not only build that platform, but sustain it over time, because you really have to change and morph yourself, much like Madonna reinvents herself or the Rolling Stones puts out multiple albums. You really have that same burden as a speaker if you want to have a long-term career. So my emphasis was always, yes, I knew that was something I wanted to do, but I wanted to build the foundation of the business so that I could have a long-term career.
And the, I love that you said that, because it's the, this metamorphosis, and so many people are, they're a little nervous about it. I just had Jeffrey Hazlett on the show, and I know, you know, Jeffrey, sure. And we were talking about this constant reinvention. I mean, here's this guy, you know, CMO of Kodak, then he leaves, and then he's like in the mainstream media and, you know, author and all of these things. And it just is this constant evolution. What do you want to say, since this is raw and real entrepreneurship? There are a lot of people listening who are looking for the courage to actually start their business, and they're terrified, Terry, of what people are going to think.
Well, they wouldn't be terrified if you do your homework first. So it makes perfect sense if you say, for example, I want to build this business, and you've worked in the industry. I mean, Susan, you are such a brilliant example. You wanted to expand and explore the significance of AI. So you didn't just wake up and say, I'm going to open an AI business. You went back to school. You went to MIT. You cultivated an education and a background and credibility, and you partnered with people so that when you make that launch, people really say something more like, well, that makes perfect sense. And so I think not that you're going to ever alleviate the fear, because of course you're flying solo. But when you've built a strong platform of knowledge and you've cultivated a database of contacts, and then you do the work, it's easier to rest on your confidence of your capabilities because you've done that work.
That's huge. Like doing the research and not just saying, yes, this is something I want to do. So I'm going to sit on my lily pad and I'm going to manifest. I'm just going to sit like this and I'm just going to manifest it. There's the research and the work and being very deliberate and intentional, which is always what you are. So with Presentation Ready, I kind of felt like, knowing you all these years, this is like a book you gave birth to, because it was kind of like, despite everything else that you were working on, it was kind of like floating over here in the background. So what was it that finally, you know, like, it's like anything, but when we're creatives, right? What was that moment that you were like, that's it, I have to write this?
Yeah. So Presentation Ready is really the book in my heart that I've always wanted to do. So I'm very excited about it. I think it's the best thing I've ever personally done. And so the goal of this book was to help people to build and deliver more polished and persuasive presentations, whether they sell a product, a service, or a cause. So it's very intentional about helping people who have a message that needs to drive conversion. So for the entrepreneurs, the solopreneurs, the people that are on this call, if you want to build your business, one of the first places you can start to make a significant difference is in your messaging and the way that you speak to a specific topic. So did you craft a persuasive message? Did you deliver it in a way that was creative and savvy? And then did you speak in your own authentic voice so that the listener can hear not only your passion for the work, but they can connect with you as a result of that? So case, creativity, and delivery. So with that in mind, and I'll take you back in time since we're linking decades of relationship, but back in the day, I wrote a book called Sales Speak, which addressed the 9 biggest sales presentation mistakes that people make. So fast forward 20 years, it made sense to revisit that content and say, are these still the 9 mistakes? And if so, why? And if not, why not? Did anything fall off? Did anything need to be added to the list? And so to cut to the chase, I conducted a really deep dive research study in cooperation with two PhDs and graduate students and students from my alma mater, San Diego State University, to ask this question. Does making a sales presentation mistake matter? Does it cost you a win or a deal or an opportunity? And in that first phase of the study, over 2,500 participants from multiple generations selling multiple different types of products, services, and causes, the answer overwhelmingly was yes. And that 9 mistakes morphed to 12 mistakes. So then we said, wow, okay, thank you for sharing and being so transparent and telling us what you think those mistakes are. What are they? And so we heard all kinds of things, and we had all these incredible confessions from people who said, well, if I was honest and I look back, I think this, and this cost me. We then went to the listeners and we got their observations. So maybe somebody comes in, they present, and they didn't take action. And we said, why? Why did you say no to that opportunity or yes to this opportunity? So the dual perspectives in the book, in addition to identifying the mistakes, really helped us to surface some very tactical and practical solution steps for the readers. Well, that was lovely, as you know, until because we launched that research study report on May 5th of 2020, and it was amazing for 2 whole weeks. The pandemic hit, and we had to pivot to a virtual environment. So we decided to launch a phase 2, and phase 2 was almost a complete year of doing the same research, but strictly in virtual environments. And then the third and final year, which was post-pandemic, included in-person, virtual, and hybrid presentations, assessing, do these 12 mistakes still play out? And then what are the solution steps? So all of that led to the proposal that we submitted to LinkedIn. That's how the LinkedIn course came together. That LinkedIn course, that script then led me to my new literary agent. My new literary agent helped me to get the deal with McGraw-Hill. We fired that out ever so quickly. And, you know, now I just did an interview with Forbes the day before yesterday. Fast Company's done 2 excerpts. Like, things are growing. We're heading to New York next week. It's amazing. Like, and I'm grateful and honored. And again, super excited to share this material with people because I think it will make a difference in their lives, whether they're a small business owner or on a larger scale corporation or association.
There's no question, Terry. And I'm like, you know, I want to pause here for a moment, because when people are listening or they're watching on YouTube or wherever you're ingesting the content, the research study was 5,000 people, 5 years. Terry's been a speaker for 30 years. The book, like when Terry sent me the book, which I have right here, I'm like, dang, girl, you got McGraw-Hill, LinkedIn. You know, this isn't like Terry threw up some slides on LinkedIn. She went into the LinkedIn studios. She was sending us photos. Like, I was so freaking proud of my friend and sister from another mister. But I want everyone to understand, this is years and years and years of work. And one of the entrepreneurial traps is to look at someone's success and compare it to, you know, your few months in entrepreneurship or even a few years. This is 30 years. And to get to this point where it's like Forbes and Fast Company and, you know, all of the things that Terry is doing. So Terry, I want to, you know, which of the mistakes, just on a personal level, is the most painful one for you to observe? And why?
Oh, I love it. So I can confess, I have personally made each one of the 12 mistakes at one point or another in my
life. Who hasn't? Right.
You know, so, and you can feel it, right? You're like, and once you know what they are, you'll know when you make it and you're like, oh shoot. They sometimes your body just takes over and it happens. So, so can I point to just a couple of nuggets from the data research? So there were, in the research, there were three mistakes that always rose to the top. So they, we call them the big three. And I think that we're all guilty of committing these. So the number three biggest mistake that most people self-confessed is that they conclude at the end of a meeting or presentation, but they don't close. They don't have an ask. The number two biggest mistake that people confessed is that they're far too informative in nature versus persuasive. And the number one mistake that people confessed is that they wing it. And, and so as we dig deeper, the simple answer on the winging it issue is, well, I didn't have time. Like, why do people wing it? I didn't have time. I was just really busy. Or you know what, the overconfident answer. I've been doing this for so long, I can do it in my sleep. And so in the range of those two things are the solution steps, because you have to take the time to really structure your message for every meeting, even if you only use an extemporaneous format and you kind of outline it, and so that you know that you're going to hit those talking points before you walk out the door. Because how many of us have walked out of a meeting and thought, oh my gosh, I forgot to cover something because we didn't wing it. So for me, it just depends. And I think that if I'm winging it, it's because I fall under that busy category. I'll think, oh my gosh, I've been doing this for so long, I could do it in my sleep. But it's that, it's how these things tie together. The way you customize for that client, the stories or anecdotes you're going to use for that particular situation, and then reading the room. You know, sometimes people roll in hot and you got to kind of take a beat and breathe. And then kind of feel the space and then figure out what the cadence is going to be for that meeting. This is about the art of presenting. And then how do you really stand out so that they say, oh my gosh, Susan's different. Wow. You know what? The way I've heard this before, but the way Terry's saying it, it's really landing in my mind in a different way. And that's going to change the way that I want to partner with you and work with you. So you kind of get goosebumps. You'll feel it. We have those goosebump moments when you're really in alignment and connection.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned the winging it, because I'm because it's raw and real entrepreneurship, so I'm not even going to be nice about it. People wing it because it's really their ego. And it's like, we will always prioritize what we think is important. So the day Terry and I are doing the show, it is Jim's birthday. She was like, he woke up to balloons and magic and, you know, everything, because that is a priority. Terry is freaking busy. You heard, you know, Forbes, Fast Company, New York, like all of it. We all have a lot of things on our plate, but we will prioritize the people and the situations. And I would say, if you're so damn busy that you're winging your meetings, then you have too many meetings in your damn calendar and you better claw it back. The other thing I would say is a little technique. So my director of communications, Abigail, she puts people's LinkedIns in my calendar, because some days I don't like these days, Terry, but I'll have like 8 meetings and I want to know, and I want to find, like Harvey McKay has taught us, McKay 66. I want to see like who we know in common. I want to take a minute and read what your last 5 posts have been on LinkedIn. Where can we get to that common ground? I'm always, the question is, are you busy or are you productive? Because your bank account will tell you. This is raw and real entrepreneurship. Okay, Terry.
I love it.
We talk a lot on the show about pitching and raising money, because a lot of our founders who come on the show Now I've interviewed almost 400 founders. They're raising money. They're raising angel money. They're raising seed capital, A rounds, whatever they're raising. I want to speak specifically to pitching, because this is, sometimes you have 5 minutes to do a pitch. What advice would you give to that person? Like, they've got 5 minutes to, it's like Shark Tank, but you know, even less time.
I know there's so much I can say about this topic, but you and I started talking about this when we, before we jumped on the call. Even though the response on the research results said that the number one answer was winging it, I think that the number one most common mistake that people make is that they're overly informative versus persuasive. So when you're getting ready for your pitch meeting, you really want to allocate the most significant amount of time to your top three most compelling arguments. What is it you want to prove or say? And so when I'm sitting and I'm working with someone, I begin with, let's storyboard your message. And so I use a formula. It's in the book. It's called Monroe's Motivated Sequence. I can't take credit for that, but he's no longer on the planet. So I graciously can share his message with you. But Monroe suggested, if you really want to change the mind of a listener in a logical, clean way, no crazy, weird, manipulative closing tactics, then again, we use this debate strategy in a selling environment called Monroe's Motivated Sequence to help people understand the unique nuances and differences between a talk that's informative versus persuasive. Mm-hmm. And in that five-step process, which we're not going to go into deep dive today, but I'll do a shameless plug. I encourage you to pick up Presentation Ready. But in the book, he talks about the fact that there are five steps: the attention step, the need step, the satisfaction step, the visualization step, and the action step. Now, from a simplistic standpoint, we go, of course, but it's the way we develop each of those steps that makes such a significant difference. So in the attention step, if you were coming to me and you're like, okay, let's work on our pitch, I would say, what are we going to say in that first 30 seconds or 5 seconds? We would take the 5 minutes, you divide it into six components, right? Introduction, three body points, a conclusion, and a close. You take the six components, you divide it into the 5 minutes, and you know, you've got a little bit over a minute, maybe a minute 20 per component. So how would you open in your first minute and 20? That's going to give them what we would call an awakening or strike curiosity. It's not about a pithy quote or a statistic. It's, how did you craft an awakening? Then when you go into the need step, it's, why do they need you? And those are different arguments from the laundry list or grocery list that most people say, like, we've been doing this for 30 years. We're number one in the industry. We've done this, we've done that, and we've done this, and we've done, and it starts like a giant grocery list. That's not compelling. It's informative. It is not persuasive. So your need step is about cultivating the what that means for the listener. The satisfaction step is where you give your evidence. Then the visualization step literally gets the listener to think about the future. They should be able to visualize the future with themselves, taking action on what you've just suggested. And that future state feels better than where they are today. And if they aren't feeling that, the odds that they're going to move forward are probably pretty slim. If it feels neutral or benign, no sense of urgency. If it feels like, oh, that sounds better. So that visualization step is often left out, but it's really one of the key components to drive a conversion of decision making. And then the action step is, what do you want them to do as a result of that message? Is it an introduction? Is it the next meeting? Is it a referral? Is it to sign the agreement? And there's so many answers, but that's the first step, is getting people, when they're crafting a message, to get out of the overly informative zone and into the persuasive zone.
I love that, Terry. It's like so concrete. There are steps, and it's crafting that key message. And the, you know, one of the things is that procrastination is a form of perfection, right? And that there's no perfect. I mean, how many VCs have I pitched in my career? And not everyone's going to resonate with that message. You know, right now pitching the pause, my opening statement is, have you ever had a hot flash? I have to know my audience. And there are, you know, and I said to you, there's someone who's very interested in investing, and she has a woman-led fund funding women-led startups. And she was, I said to her, I'm like, if I have to explain menopause, this is probably not the investment for someone. And we started laughing. And then she's like, I had a hot flash last night. I only wear black now.
Love
like,
that. Oh my gosh. Perfect.
Yeah. And it's like you say, like really, really know the audience and just be so clear. Now, Terry, with the book, and we want everyone to read the book, because this is not, you can't just, you know, whether it's sales, whether it's your pitch, whatever it is, you cannot just show up and not be prepared. So can you give an example of, you know, I guess someone who's doing it well, and you could even take from media or whatever you want to take from, again, Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, someone who should maybe publicly read your book because they're not doing it well.
Oh my gosh. Well, that would open a can of worms. So I agree with you 100%. I really feel that everybody sells something, again, whether it's a product, service, or cause, or when you're selling yourself in a job interview or for a promotion. You know, one of the big media opportunities that we're getting right now is that May kicks off interview month and graduations for kids that are transitioning, you know, from high school and from college into the job state. And, you know, unfortunately, in our research, we came across this nugget where somebody said, you know, well, how do I get the job? And one of the interview questions was, well, why should we hire you? And this is staggering, but they said, well, because I really need the job. And I'm like, that's not why they're going to hire you. And so even a job interview is a persuasive message. Mm. And so what I want people to think about is even, and again, I'm not going to get into politics, but I think that debates on television are a national public job interview.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're watching somebody speak or present, we are looking at them through the lens of three things. So Aristotle called it Aristotle's rhetorical triangle. We want to look at that individual's ethos or ethics. We want to look at their pathos, which is their heart. And we want to look at their logos, logic, ethos, logos, pathos. So your credibility as a speaker, and this is kind of in that second phase of the book, which is all about creativity. How do we drive connection? How do we really make the message work? So to answer your question, yes, initially when you're crafting your message, you've got to get into the mindset of being persuasive. The second piece is, are you connecting? And what your opening illustration where you said, how many of you have had experienced a hot flash? That immediately is going to drive connection. So when I see somebody who has a message that's really landing, I watch for when the audience leans in. I look to see what little funny quips they, when it lands with the timing. We all have our own personality and style. So you don't have to be like somebody else. The best you to be is you. So how do you make your personality and style stand out and really help to authenticate and add your sizzle? So you are a perfect example of this because you're sassy, you're feisty, but you are rooted in hard work ethics and you do your job and you do the research. And that is an interesting brand. You know, nobody can be Susan Sly. And that's what I try to tell people, like, you got to be you. And that is part of that creating connection. And those are the things that we look for. So long answer is, the X factor in creating a great presentation is when your best you comes into that moment to deliver the best case and presentation for your message.
And that is so huge, right? And the X factor, it's like your best you. And I want to address, I'll be bold. I don't think debate should be optional if you're going to run a country. No, don't even get me. Yeah, I'll start. I don't care. Again, it's real entrepreneurship. I'm just going to say it. Debate shouldn't be optional. And it, you know, no. And there's in entrepreneurship too, is, as you're very aware, Terry, the figurehead of the company. So when I think of, say, NVIDIA and Jensen Huang, when Jensen does the opening keynote at NVIDIA GTC, you know, he's charismatic, he's passionate, he makes sense, he's a visionary, that visionary CEO. And so many people, if you're not comfortable in front of people, you maybe shouldn't be the CEO, because now more than ever, people are demanding transparency of who is leading that company. Okay. And so everybody needs to work on their presentation skills, because we're always presenting. We're always presenting. And so I can't emphasize enough, everyone needs the book. Like the audience knows, they know, like, I'm just going to be direct. You need the book because you're presenting something. I'm just going to also say, if you're not closing the number of sales you want, you need the book. If you're hiring people, you need the book, because not only are you presenting the vision of the company, but you need to see where they perhaps are falling short. And is that something that, you know, is a gap that you're willing to work with? If you're raising money, you need the book. You just need the book.
As an entrepreneur. Oh my gosh, I love you so much. That is amazing. Well, and to your point about the significance of this specific skill set. So initially, the misnomers about the words public speaking is that people think it means you're speaking to a large group, but the size of the audience isn't the issue. Most of the significant presentations typically take place one-on-one or small group, but does that mean that your delivery skills are any less significant? Heck no. And when you think of a strong leader, even if we go back to a classic illustration of a Steve Jobs, I mean, people noticed when he gave a message, when he spoke, people would listen. You are the vision. You're communicating, you're selling internally. You're trying to get people to take action on your leadership strategy. And the way that you speak makes such a significant difference, which is a fabulous segue into the last section on delivery. So the number one thing that people noticed about others was that we said, okay, what did people self-identify? And what people self-identified was the three issues I gave you. But when we asked them, okay, who better to judge salespeople than other salespeople? So when somebody's coming to you, pitching you, selling to you, what did you notice? And there were two things that stood out. The first one was that the presenter was boring, boring, boring. Right. So don't you think it's funny that most people self-identify as being overly informative, but other people are boring? And it's because of that third person effect. We don't see ourselves the way other people see us. And then the second one, which I think was one of the most painful in the research, is that verbal missteps, meaning everything from saying, like, you know, using too many industry acronyms where nobody knows what you're talking about. Swearing, people that were close talkers, right? You're like feeling spatial relationships. So all of those things fall under that last category, which is delivery, which is a whole nother, you know, can of worms in terms of how do we assess decision makers.
Terry, it's so interesting about the self-awareness and the self-actualization, right? And thinking like, oh, that person's being overly. And I've seen it firsthand when especially in technology, where you'll have an engineer going, oh, that person is awful. And then if you ask them about their product, then suddenly they're talking about Kubernetes and they're talking about like, you know, all of these different things. And to an audience that A, doesn't care, doesn't know, what they want to know is what is the result and how does that benefit me, especially from the sales perspective, right? And so my final question for you is, what is your, while someone's waiting for their book to arrive, right? Yes. What is your best tip? What is your homework? Go into professor mode. What can someone do to work on right now while they're listening to the show and going, okay, I realize that I have been making these mistakes. So what should they do?
So exactly what we're doing right now, we all have the gift of having access to video, whether it's in a Zoom call or using your video on your phone. And I would say, as uncomfortable as it may be, set up a mini scrimmage where you have somebody who's in front of you and you're pitching to them as if they were the client, that dream client or dream prospect, and you're trying to deliver your message to them and get it on film so that you can just sit in a quiet moment and watch the playback. And then in that reflection, as uncomfortable as it may be, you'll be able to look at your own presentation through the lens of the listener. It's one of the hardest things to do, but it's one of the most revealing things to do, because you can say, wow, did I address those talking points in my case? Was it creative? Did I tell a story that people could relate to? And then how was my body language? How was my facial expressions? How did I sound? How was my word selection? And when you look at those three things, just from that place of awareness, you're going to be able to start to make course corrections. But again, you know, the gift of the book is that it's just going to help you to get there faster, to give you the solution steps to fix those things. But I think, as scary as it is, and trust me, I don't like it. I'm sure you don't either. I mean, when somebody shows me a video of one of my presentations, and I've been doing this for 30 years, I don't like it. I don't enjoy that experience. How do you feel about it?
Oh my gosh. No, I was doing a keynote for the Silicon Valley Education Foundation on the future of women in AI. And here's a raw and real example. So I wanted to, the colors for the organization are lime green and purple. And I knew the executive director, and it was for such a great cause, right? And I knew the executive director was very fond of the colors. So I ordered Terry this lime green dress. Oh. And I thought, this is going to be fantastic. I'm keynoting. It's a great dress to wear on a stage. And I didn't even try it on before I took it to the event. And it was just not a dress that was flattering on the stage. So instead of me like paying attention to what I was saying and the message and how it was landing, all I could look at when I looked at the playback video was, oh my gosh, Susan, what kind of fashion disaster did you choose? And if I was distracted by it, I'm sure someone else was too, right? And so to your point, no, I don't, but that's how I dissect it. That's how I get better. And it's this constant and never ending improvement, right? And I know you're exactly the same way.
It's awful. And your voice sounds differently to you than it sounds to other people. But how many of us went into shock when we listened to the playback on our own outgoing voicemail message? You know, have you ever re-recorded it over and over and over again until you feel like you get it right? Now, why? Because once we become aware of the way we speak, we want to fix it. But, you know, it's just, it's awful. But I don't know any other I don't know that. To me, that's the fastest way to course correct, because awareness is the first step to course correcting. And so sometimes people ask me, gosh, Terry, why did you focus on the mistakes in the book? And that's because you can't fix what you don't recognize as a problem. So that's the whole emphasis behind Presentation Ready and trying to help people get where they want to go. This is not a gotcha book. This book is designed to help you to see what your peers, your fellow colleagues, when they've been presenting, have struggled with, and then some solution steps to help you to get past it faster. And that, I mean, I have goosebumps just saying it to you, like at my core, that's what I want to help people to do on the planet. This is what I love to do. And when they call me afterwards and they say, I got the win, I got the deal, I got the job, I got the money, I got the funding, I got the speaking gig, I got it, I got it, I got it, then that's how I sleep at night. That's how I think. That's my purposeful work on the planet. And that's when I get joy. So I can't wait to work on some of your stuff with you.
and for everyone listening, wherever you are in the world, I've known Terry for a very long time. And Terry is the person that talks about the wins of the people that she is working with, that she is speaking to, the readers of her books. This is her life. When I opened up the book, I was like, girl, this is your life's opus. I mean, I don't know how you're going to top this with the next one. I really don't. Jack Canfield said, you know, when you write that book that is your opus, when he wrote The Success Principles, he said, I didn't imagine that 10 years later, I would still be speaking on these. And when I read Presentation Ready, when I look at the 12 mistakes, and you said it, a pandemic didn't change 12 mistakes. In fact, you know, it amplified what was already there. We saw people who, you know, didn't wear, you know, they showed up on screen, didn't even realize they were on screen and they were dressed inappropriately. I won't even get into that. All of the different things that happened. And I really believe in my heart that this is going to be transformative, not just for everyone who hears this message, but for the audiences that are on the receiving end of it. So Terry, thank you so much.
Thank you for
get the book. Wherever you buy books, just go and get it. presentation ready. And you know what? Also, I'm going to do a big ask because very rarely do we sell anything on the show. I'm going to say this, buy multiple copies. If you're running a sales team, if you have a startup, if you have people who are representing your brand, buy copies for them too. Make it a weekly book club. Just digest a mistake every week and work through it. So Terry, that's my,
oh my
that's
gosh. My thank you, my friend, really from just, thank you. You're an amazing friend. I'm grateful for this opportunity. I hope that these insights will help everyone who's listening. I wish you all great happiness and continued success. And just remember this one thing, please use your voice for good. That's all I'm asking. Use your voice for good.
Use your voice. Oh, amen to that, sister. Well, Terry, thank you so much for being here, and check out Terry's LinkedIn learning course. And I would just say, get the book. If the show has been helpful, Terry and I would like a 5-star review, and also share the show and the tips with the people in your team because they can benefit as well. So with that, Terry, thanks again for being on Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. And to everyone, God bless, go rock your day. And I will see you in the next episode. Well, hopefully you enjoyed my interview with Terry, and I would love to hear from you. So please definitely share the show. I would love a 5-star review. We have just migrated over to the C-Suite network. So definitely we'd love to get you out there sharing and being an ambassador of the show. We'd absolutely love that. And this week's Startup Journal is slightly different. And this is really for those of you who have aging parents, maybe you have kids at home, and you're building a business. And so there's this constant back and forth and concern, and also with all of these different things that really can preoccupy our time. So in this week's show, I just got back from Canada, where I was cleaning out my father's house, where he has lived for over 4 decades. And the man was a bit of a hoarder. I'm not going to kid you. There were old newspapers there. There were documents that should have been shredded. I did 12 boxes of shredding. And there are things, honestly, that I saw that perhaps as a child, I didn't really need to see, to be very candid. It was exhausting. And I'd love to say to you that, you know, it was such a privilege to get to do it. It was exhausting. It was dirty work. It was very, very long days, but it was necessary and it needed to be done. And the hardest thing, especially in terms of founding a startup, is that there's always, when you're starting a new business, there's a massive degree of excitement. There's also a lot of questions, especially for you as the founder and your team. They want to know certain things. And there I was doing this clean out. And to be really candid, it was tough. And I had, you know, tried to schedule in some meetings in between all of it. And I think that the biggest realization for me was that even for the things that were necessary, and I did hire people and I did get help to do it, there were certain things that I needed to decide. There were certain family artifacts that I needed to decide. Are we keeping that? Are we donating that? Or what are we doing? There were certain documents that only I should have been looking at as we went through the process. And I think at the end of the day, one of the pieces of revelation for me was that sometimes it is so important that we step back and just say, these are my wins, and this is as good as it's going to get today. And that's okay, because my best today is not necessarily indicative of my best on my best day. And that's what I really had to do. So it was taking that time at night and saying, okay, instead of beating myself up for, you know, these are the 12 hours that I was cleaning out my dad's house, as opposed to working on my business, what did I actually get done? And it was, at some points, it was scheduling a meeting, or it was responding to a Slack or a text, getting an answer, setting certain things up, responding to some emails, signing some documents. And that was the best I could do. And the reason I want to share that with you is that some of you are going through some life challenges. Maybe it is a negative health report. Maybe there's something going on financially. Maybe it's in your relationship. Maybe, again, it's aging parents. Maybe a child is going a bit astray, or there's something going on with a close friend. Whatever it is that's going on for you, I've learned that you have to give yourself permission to be able to say that my best day today does not dictate my best day on my best day. And there are going to be times when life is going to prioritize for you, and that's perfectly okay. If you can afford to get help to do things, then do it. If you can, you know, have some great friends to come in and support you, then do it. And just know that the more you try and do things alone, the harder it's going to be and the harder you're going to be on yourself. So that's this week's journal. Love you guys to pieces. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in the next show and in next week's journal. Have an amazing, amazing day. And don't forget, you can always write in, give your feedback at susansly.com. And with that, God bless. And I will see you next week.
Hey, this is Susan, and thanks so much for listening to this episode on Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. If this episode or any episode has been helpful to you, you've gotten at least one solid tip from myself or my guests, I would love it if you would leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. After you leave your review, go ahead and email reviews@susansly.com. Let us know where you left the review. And if I read your review on air, you could get a $50 Amazon gift card. And we would so appreciate it because reviews do help boost the show and get this message all over the world. If you're interested in any of the resources we discussed on the show, go to susansly.com. That's where all the show notes live. And with that, go out there, rock your day. God bless. And I will see you in the next episode.